This is the March to the Arch podcast, your place for Missouri Valley Conference news, talk, and takes.
Hey, Valley fans, you're listening to the March to the Arch podcast. Is your team going to win? Make some noise!
Welcome to episode 7 of the March to the Arch podcast in this 2021-2022 Missouri Valley Conference season. It is still preview time, and we have two more teams that Baker and I are going to break down: Missouri State Bears and the Indiana State Sycamores. We're also joined by Wyatt Wheeler of the Springfield News Leader, and he's going to talk a little about the Bears and just the Valley as a whole. But before we get into that, how are we doing tonight, Baker?
Hey, we are at the we're at the tail end of these previews now. I was just thinking about that as you were talking. I was like, man, we got four to go, and that's two of them tonight, and then we got the two top teams next week. But it's starting to feel like we kind of have a little bit more of a feel for the league, kind of, as I'm, at least for me personally, going through these teams. I feel a little bit better about where I'm kind of picking teams.
It's starting to get real too, because I mean, last night my Salukis had an exhibition game. So I mean,
and they hit a huge crowd, right?
Yeah, I mean, over 4,000, which is good for an exhibition game Tuesday night.
Exactly. No, I'm not. I wasn't making a joke. That was actually. I know your Saluki fans aren't used to having good crowds, but for a basketball game on a Tuesday night exhibition, that's great.
Can't beat it.
That's more than that football game you showed me that one time where you guys had like 45 people there.
Stop it. All right. You got into a Twitter fight over FCS Missouri. No,
I didn't get into a Twitter fight. I just literally pointed out the obvious. You sent a picture of the final score, and it looked like there were 14 people there.
Yeah, because we were beating the brakes off of the Redbirds.
There were more people at the rink tonight at my son's hockey practice.
Here's all I'm going to say. Like, I know you're doing this facetiously, because I don't know if you can name one player on the Redbirds football team. But we'll leave it at that. It's fine. It's well
James
documented.
Robinson.
Nope. Close. He did play the Birds at one time.
And if you threw out the Salukis, I was going to throw out Jeremy Chin.
Yep. But well documented.
Love Jeremy, by the way. Now.
Well documented. Baker, not the biggest FCS football fan. Totally fine. But sometimes he'll get in there and stir the pot on FCS football on Twitter from March Arch Baker.
You pulled me into that one, for what it's worth. If just to be fair.
Here's the thing. Anytime SIU beats Illinois State, I'm going to pull you in. I don't care if it's checkers. I don't care if it's basketball. You're going to get pulled in.
That's fair. Real quick, before we get to one thing I want to talk about, the Dogs are like number one, aren't they?
In football?
Aren't they like number one in FCS or
three.
Close to
three.
Number three? Okay.
Yeah.
I knew they were in the top. They were one of the top teams. I saw the other day, maybe it was somebody had their power rankings, had them third or first.
Yes, someone did, and that person caught a lot of flack, which I don't necessarily disagree with.
All right, well, Dogs playing some good football, so go.
They are. It's a fun time.
Go get them, Vance. Go get them, Vance. But, hey, we are on the kind of the eve of Halloween, and I know that we had a great conversation the last time we did that. We talked about Halloween, but I thought about we were talking about something at work today with my team, and I want to get a snap – No thought whatsoever. I have not talked to you about this. Your three favorite Halloween candies. Go.
Oh, candies. This is really good. So I think it's different too, because like, it's not just, it's a Halloween candy, which is different than what I'd say my favorite candy just in general is if I'm at, you know, in the grocery store
100%,
checking out.
100%. So my favorite candy is not in my Halloween candies.
Okay. Fun size or Halloween size Twix.
Okay.
Number one for me, I'm always going to dive through a bowl, to get a Twix. I'm going to go top three. I am going to go the little bags of Sour Patch Kids.
It's a great choice.
And then this one's tough because I don't know if I would consider it a parade candy or a Halloween candy, but I'm a big proponent of Smarties.
Oh, I count that for sure.
Okay.
I think they're disgusting, but they count.
Oh, well, I think Smarties are great. Okay. I love them at Halloween and I love them at parades. Where it deviates from my personal favorite candies is Kit Kat. Fun size Kit Kats are a monstrosity to try to unwrap. And by the end of it, your hands are already chocolatey and you've probably broken it.
That's true. That's pretty awesome. So my number one is also could be one of the most frustrating Halloween candies. My number one is the fun size Starburst. It can also be one of the most frustrating if you get a yellow, but it's awesome.
Okay. I was going to ask you like what one, cause I was going to say double orange would be the worst thing that I could see come out of there.
No, I disagree. I think the orange is fine. I mean, obviously pink and red is the way to go. Obviously that's what you want. That's why they made a bag called Favorites. But anyway, the definitive March the Arch top three, Starburst number one. Number two is Skittles, the little bags of Skittles, because I am more of a fruit candy type of guy. And number three, I'm actually going to go with your number one, Twix. Twix, I think, if you're going chocolate, Twix is the premier one, because Reese's are good, but they're always going to be a little smashed up in Halloween. You know, like those fun size Snickers, you get nothing out of that. Like, I think Twix is the way to go.
Twix, full size Twix, too much caramel. That's where fun size is where it's at.
Wow. You know, that's an interesting take. And I don't know if I disagree with you on that one.
I've got one question that only you can answer in this situation. So you're a father. Yes. Dad tax on the candy. Is it going to happen this year?
A dad tax
on candy.
What do you mean?
Where kids come home from trick or treating. It's like, hey, dad tax, got to take a handful.
No. But what we definitely are going to sift through what comes home, and we're going to limit what goes into the available candy for the children.
So
I am that dad, but, and to say where that goes, who knows? I don't want to speculate on this podcast where that candy's going.
Let's just say the Baker kiddos won't see very many Starbursts or Twix if I had to guess.
Oh God. Yeah. Here's the thing. I have no shame that like if my guy and gal are just walking down the street and they've got a bag full of candy, I might just see a Starburst sitting on top and I just reach in the bag and take it. Like I'm that dad, you know.
I didn't expect this to go here, Baker, but do you give out candy at your house? Are you
so we're a bowl and a stool type of family because we like to, because obviously my kids are 5 and 3. So we're taking them. We'll go with our neighbors and we'll take them through the neighborhood and stuff. But like, we're also, you know, we're not sitting there passing out candy. No.
Okay.
But we're a bull on the stool. Like we're not the Grinch of Halloween.
So lights on at the yeah. Montage Baker yeah. household. Okay.
Yeah. And I think they'll probably, maybe my kids will make like a sign or something, say take one, even though no kid takes one.
No.
And nor should they. Cause I probably wouldn't have taken one when I was a kid either. So I do want to ask you real quick. So what is your favorite candy? If it couldn't be on your list.
Kit Kat, full-size Kit Kat.
Full-size Kit Kat is number one.
Yep.
Okay, so my number one is Caramel Apple Suckers, which I also don't know if you can throw into the mix on Halloween, because I've never really seen passed out.
This is 100% an old person thing as I've gotten older. Fruit sugar heavy candies are absolutely wrecking my teeth. Like, I get the pains. Okay. Like, Skittles right now, I can't even... can't handle without getting a little pain and going to the old, whenever, you know, hey, you have the two times a year dentist checkup. It's like, hey, you got any pain on the teeth? Only when I have fruit candy.
Interesting. So I've never had that before, but I also don't eat a ton of candy either. Like I don't just go buy a candy bar or anything. So I'm
a little concerned because I honestly think my dentist's name is Baker now that I think about this. I'm just surrounding myself with Bakers, and I don't know how I feel about that.
We'll let that one slide. You want to talk some Sycamores?
Let's get in to the Sycamores. All right, Valley fans, let's get into the Indiana State Sycamores. This is the first team that we're going to preview that has a coaching change in the offseason. So before we jump into the Josh Schertz era, let's recap last year, the last year for Coach Greg Lansing. In that season, the Sycamores went 15 and 10, and in Missouri Valley conference play, they were 11-7. I know between me and you, Baker, we were big Lansing fans, just in general, not only as a coach, but as a person. It was just one of those things you hate to see someone of that stature in the Missouri Valley Conference leave the Valley.
I mean, and just to throw a little wrinkle in it, who was the first person we saw when we got to St. Louis last year?
I mean, we hadn't even checked in. We were walking to check in, and there he is going for a walk.
I can't beat it. Can't beat it. No, I loved Lansing. I thought he was a really good coach. And especially, I don't know if you remember the Athletic article and how it kind of highlighted the kind of the surroundings around the program. It kind of felt like he was doing a ton with what, like, with not much.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that article was eye-opening for me, just the budget. Yes, they've renovated the Holman Center, but like just what it has done to the resources available to a coach at that stage of his contract. Yep. And with the success he had had.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I mean, at the end of the day, in his time there, he did get him to a tournament. He won an Arch Madness. He unfortunately had some of his best teams come along during that Jake Odom era, where he just had the juggernaut that was Wichita State right then and there. That was when Wichita was number one in the country or right around the top of the rankings. So it was just kind of bad timing. And I think recruiting was also a tough thing for him. He recruited some really good players, but it just never felt like he could pull it all together. But last year, just to kind of put a bow on last year, it was a decent season. I don't want to say a bad season. They had that game. I remember distinctly watching that game against Purdue early in the season where they had them. I mean, they had Purdue on the ropes and couldn't finish them off. But the Valley regular season started off so interesting for them. They started off 0-4 with four losses to Drake and Missouri State. And that third series, which it's crazy looking back on the Drake-Missouri State Loyola to start your season. That's just a murderer's row of teams to play. They were one of the teams, though, that knocked off Loyola in the regular season last year. Which is a feat, big time feat. So, and that kind of got things rolling. They got that win against Loyola, and then they just ripped off. They ripped off a lot of wins from there. They had the slip up at the end of the season against Valpo, and other than that, though, it was a pretty darn good end of the regular season. Got to Arch Madness. We talked about it. One of the most brutal games to watch I've ever been to at Arch Madness was Indiana State Evansville, when neither team could hit the broadside of a barn, but Indiana State found a way to make enough plays at the end to win. And then they just ran into a really tough Loyola. And, I mean, Loyola was a Sweet 16 team, beat a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. So losing by 16 to them is not necessarily it's not necessarily the worst luck either. So they gave them a tough game and did what they could, but just wasn't going to be enough.
I agree. And I would just summarize it as the last half of their season and even the last three-fourths of the conference season looked great for Indiana State. I mean, they won 8 of 10, or if you want to even go further, 10 of 12 last conference games, but they had a very favorable conference schedule at the end. I mean, it wasn't murderer's row at the end. I mean, three series was Drake, Missouri State, and Loyola, but it was one of those like, hey, they were rolling, they were winning, but they just hit a buzzsaw with Loyola, and it was just kind of the end of the Greg Lansing era.
Yeah, nothing you could do about it. And it definitely felt at the end, the decision was made. I mean, quite frankly, the decision was made with Greg Lansing. I still go back to that press conference and that announcement. I just thought that was so brutal, but wish Greg nothing but the best. I don't even know where Greg is now, but I wish him nothing but the best. And now we're on to the Josh Schertz era.
Yeah, so Josh Schertz joining the Indiana State Sycamores in his first season. Just a little background. He is a graduate of Florida Atlantic University. That's also where he began his coaching career as an assistant coach. He also coached at Queens and High Point as an associate head coach before getting his head coaching gig at D2 Lincoln Memorial University. At Lincoln Memorial, he had a record of 337 wins and 69 losses. That's like an 83% winning
record. Insane.
As a coach of the Rail Splitters, was a five-time South Atlantic tournament champ, nine-time South Atlantic regular season champ, and he was coach of the year seven times. So there is a pedigree there for success at Indiana State.
I agree. This is, I think this is going to be a really good hire. I think it'll be interesting to see how it goes the first year. I'm pretty bullish on Josh Schertz as the head coach of Indiana State long-term for sure. I mean, you look at a guy whose record is like that. I don't care what level you are. He's proven that he can get a program to be a winning program. I mean, the record speaks for itself. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Couldn't agree more. And maybe let's get into this season just a little bit, Baker. I mean, sure. For me as a fan, biggest surprise other than, you know, a coaching change, which I don't think was a surprise, is for me, Tyreek Key is coming back to be a Sycamore.
Yeah. Yeah. That came out of nowhere too. I was like, I wasn't sure if he was going to go pro or, I mean, because he's good enough. I mean, he's been one of the best scorers in the league. I think it's crazy that he's coming back, which is all, it's a great thing to see. Super excited to watch him one more time.
I couldn't agree more. I thought he'd go overseas, to be honest. Like I just thought.
Yeah, or even test the D League maybe, or the G League, whatever it is now. Because he's that good.
For me, it's just a testament of probably what the type of person Josh Schertz is. I mean, everything about Tyreek Key's game and just where he was at in his collegiate career, I was just like, it had, you know, going pro overseas written all over him. So, yep. I mean, that's one of those names that you, I mean, we obviously saw in the preseason polls, preseason all conference teams, but just one of those I didn't expect. I just thought there was a foregone conclusion, coaching change. Okay, Tyreek Key is going to go get paid now.
Yeah, but on the flip side of that, some tough losses from last year's really good team that finished fourth. I don't know. We got Tobias Harris, Trey Williams, and Randy Miller, all pretty good contributors. But the name that I think stands out to everybody is Jake LaRavia, second team all MVC last year. I think everybody in the league that saw him play, I mean, he's awesome. He was one of the better forwards in the league last year. He's had to Wake Forest, which I'm sure he's gonna step up right away, but they losing their best rebounder, second best rebounder. They're losing Trey Williams, one of their best defenders. I mean, they're losing a lot off last year's team, which they're bringing back their best player, but it's really tough to replace the neck, like basically 2 through 4.
Yeah. And I mean, especially at the center position, we've talked about this and we've just, it's like beating a dead horse. If you don't have a good center this year in the Valley, that's almost, you know, that's definitely a negative and a blight on your roster because of how good the centers and the big men are in the Valley.
Yeah, no. And so going into this season, we've got, there's going to be still a few names that are going to come to mind. Cooper Neese, who's one of their sharpshooters. When Cooper Neese has it going, he's one of those volume shooters that once he has it going, he can get it rolling. Obviously him and Tyreek are going to hopefully take the bulk of the scoring load now. Julian Larry, another guy, he's a sophomore now who he showed some good things last year, but I really think he's going to need to level up his play this year. I kind of have him similar in the vein of like a Fleming from Illinois State. Two guys who really need to take that next step here in the Valley in their next second year. So those are the ones that, you know, but it'll be interesting to see because a lot of these guys coming in with Coach Schertz, I know you got Cameron Henry, Xavier Bledson, and Simon Wilbar, all three coming from Lincoln Memorial where he was coached there. So I think that's going to help this team, especially initially, try to get his system in place. And that's the part we haven't even really touched on. The system that Josh Schertz is going to run is going to be so much fun in the Valley because it is something that's not exactly a typical Valley offense. This is your run and gun Golden State Warriors type offense. This is short possessions. I was seeing some of their highlights online just when I was doing some research on Josh, and it was you would see some of their bigs come bring the ball down the floor and they're jacking up a three right away. And it's not a terrible shot. It's just if it's open, they're taking it and they're firing it up. This is going to be a team that's going to get a lot of shots up, and it'll be interesting when teams who struggle scoring in the Valley, which that tends to be some of these teams, let's just be honest. If they go up against an Indiana State team that's hitting right away, Indiana State might be able to bury some teams early in some games. And I think that makes them a really kind of interesting team.
I agree. And we've had this discussion a little bit on the side of, well, first off, I'll make the joke that, you know, hey, opponents, you know, don't follow your shot because you better get back on defense because they're coming. And so it'll be more of, I can't think of a team recently just that could potentially have the amount of possessions and the amount of attempts that we're going to see with Indiana State if the theory and, you know, if the game that Josh Hurts brings over, which we expect will happen, that type of tempo in the Valley in a long time.
It'll be interesting to watch some of the other coaches because there's a lot of great coaches in the league. I think of like a Darren DeVries when he plays against them, when Drake plays against Indiana State. I mean, he's going to have Roman Penn he's going to take the air right out of the ball. And we've seen him do that sometimes when teams kind of get going, a good point guard is going to take the air out of the ball and we're taking 25 seconds to get a good shot up. So I think that'll be a key for when you're playing against Indiana State, but it's going to be one of those teams that if they punch you in the mouth right away, you could be on your heels for an entire game and they could get a lot of really good teams. I do want to mention just a couple of things real quick. So I did mention Cameron Henry. He's definitely probably gonna be one of their starters. He has 15 points a game at Lincoln Memorial, 6 rebounds a game. And he also shoots the three. So he's a 6'6" guy. He can step out and take a three. So I think he's definitely going to be one of those shirt style offensive players, which I think is going to really bode well. De'Aaron Tucker is probably going to be their center. He was at Oregon State. He never, I know you're going to wonder, but he didn't play in the game against Loyola in the tournament, but he wasn't a factor really at Ohio or at Oregon State. But I think coming into Indiana State, I think that he's going to have to be right away. One of their bigs that's going to really have to play. The other big is Simon Wilbar, who's also coming in from Lincoln Memorial. He plays the minutes were not really there, but as a big guy who knows Shirts' system, I have to imagine that he's going to get some minutes. I talked about Xavier Bledson as well. He's probably going to be Julian Leary's backup at point guard. He was 10 points a game at Lincoln Memorial. So he's also going to know how to run the offense for a shirt style offense. And then finally, the other one I wanted to mention is Calix Stevens, who didn't play last year due to an Achilles injury. We don't really know much about him Valley wise. He's been kind of hanging around. Him and Nick Hiddle last year both had injuries. He had a back injury, but we don't know what they're going to do. And they stuck around for Josh Shirt. So we'll see. I'm not going to pretend like I know a ton about them yet, but there was definitely a little bit of hype around both. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think just in totality here is the amount of D2 transfers they have. And obviously this is Josh Hurts. He's coming from that D2 landscape. Sure. I don't remember if you mentioned him specifically, but Zach Hobbs is another one from Des Moines Area Community College. He put up, you know, double digits every game for that program and another transfer in the Shirts era. So it'll just be very interesting to see how the games translate. But with Indiana State, it's going to be such a different style team that in that first year when other coaches in the Valley is not kind of used to that style, is it enough of an enigma that will be different that they'll overperform?
Yeah, no. And I think a guy like Cooper Neese lends himself very well to an offense like this. The Tyreek Key part of it is the one I wonder about because there was a lot of times last year, and it might have been based on necessity when Indiana State wasn't scoring. They kind of got into save us Tyreek mode where they would give him the ball and he would basically make a play for him. I do think I'm optimistic for Indiana State this year. I think that Shirts' offense may unlock another part of Tyreek Key's game. And I also think it might make him more pro ready because a lot of pro teams are running this offense now that you see in the NBA. I mean, my Knicks weren't ever a 3-point shooting team. And just the other night, I think they were shooting in the 50s attempts for threes. I mean, it is, and that's a Tom Thibodeau team. So I think that it might unlock another part of Tyreek Key's game, which I think it's going to make this team really interesting, but let's jump in the schedule real quick and kind of talk about who they're going to play.
Yeah. So in the non-con, pretty decent non-con here. I mean, they've got a couple of Indiana schools. So they are at Purdue. They are in the Myrtle Beach Invitational with Oklahoma. So we'll get a little Valley action there. And then Davidson is in Utah State is in that one as well. So I think pretty decent opportunities to get some good games there.
Yeah, no, their non-con's pretty good. That game, I think that obviously Green Bay at the beginning of the season on the road, that's a game you should be able to go and win. And then you play at Purdue right away on that Friday night, which is going to be a really interesting game going to West Lafayette for them again this year. But yeah, not a terrible schedule. I'm not going to sit here and say it's the one of the best, but far from the worst. Like a North Dakota State's going to be a decent game for them. Ball State is a common opponent for a lot of Valley schools. So, and their Myrtle Beach tournament's good, but I think that the big thing that you look at when you look at their non-con is the team that's sitting right there in the middle, the team that they've got to go on the road to. And that would be the Loyola Ramblers, which is not a non-conference game, which, talk about, I mean, Valpo and Indiana State did not get gifts from the league going to Drake and going to Loyola.
No, they kind of did that travel partner thing real quick in the kind of that, what is that, northeast corridor of the Missouri Valley Conference geographic landscape there.
Yeah, no, it's that Loyola game is going to be really tough for Indiana State. But on the flip side, Loyola maybe doesn't have it rolling yet defensively, because you see as Loyola's seasons in the past couple seasons have gone, they get better defensively as the season goes on. And so there is also that opportunity to catch them early. And with the type of offense that they're going to run, maybe they come in and roll into the Gentile Arena and punch them in the mouth. Who knows? I don't know if that's the team I'd want to play if I was Loyola, to be honest with you. I would not want to play the system that is not like the others, but the one thing that I think scares me, I guess if we can just kind of put a bow on Indiana State, the thing that scares me is middle of the season. How do coaches figure this out and make this way harder on Indiana State to play that up-tempo offense? And then at that point, if we're playing half court basketball with this team, I don't know how good they are.
And I mean, you just have a lot of D2 players that are playing up to D1.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is I think the gap is getting closer just in the way that, you know, last year went with COVID and maybe guys want to stay closer to home. So maybe that doesn't matter as much, but at the end of the day, it is a different landscape for them. It's a different style of play. It's a different competition level. So we'll see how that translates. I think they're going to have early success, and then we'll see if it kind of tapers out in conference play.
I think for them to avoid Thursday night, they need to have early success.
Yeah.
I think that starting strong in the Missouri Valley is going to be pivotal for this team. But let's get to the over-under, because this is what everybody's been talking about. For Indiana State, here's a number that you've seen a few different times already, which is when we get to our final rankings in a couple of weeks, it'll be interesting to kind of tell you where the wins show up. But 6.5 wins for the Indiana State Sycamores. Vance, where do you have Indiana State?
So big first year coach, overachieving fan here. I mean, I've seen it recently with Coach Brian Mullins at Southern Illinois. So I'm going to take the over. I think the style, I think the offense, I think it's just something new to the Valley that by no means is this indicative of Josh Hurts. And I don't think it's just catching lightning in a bottle, but I think it's going to be different enough that it'll get him over the 6.5 hump to 7.
I agree with you. To me, it feels like as we've gone through these teams, you can make a case for Evansville, Valpo, and Illinois State as avoiding Thursday. But to me, the sixth seed at Arch Madness comes down to Indiana State and Bradley. And it's going to depend on how quickly Indiana State starts. The one other thing, you talked about the overachieving first-year coach. If I had to pick one of the bottom five, and this maybe is a hot take, I don't know if it is or not, but if you told me pick one of the top or one of the bottom five to finish in the top two or three, Indiana State's my pick, because I think the upside of this system and this team is higher than any of the other bottom five.
I don't hate the pick. I don't hate the take. Yeah. It's a take. It's out there. I think they're going to have to defend. And I think we saw some defensive issues last year with Indiana State. And so I'm not all the way there, but it's a good take in October 27th. It's a great take.
Yep, and I will we'll definitely show our predictions when we get to that in a couple weeks.
All right, Valley fans, we are ready to get into the Missouri State Bears. We're going to go pretty quickly through the Bears because we have a great interview with Wyatt Wheeler from the Springfield News Leader. So last season, in Dana Ford's third season, the Bears went 17-7, and in Missouri Valley Conference play, they were 12-6. In Arch Madness, they made the semifinals before ultimately losing to Drake in the best game of Arch Madness, losing 69-71. You know, real quick, Baker, thoughts on last year for the Bears?
Yeah, last year for the Bears, I mean, it's a good season. It was a really bad season COVID-wise just because they didn't get kicked off until middle of December, and they only had a three-game non-con before they had to start Valley play. For them, the story of the season was they couldn't beat the best teams. They couldn't beat the top two teams. And they had trouble beating Drake and Loyola. Some of those Drake games were awesome, though, by the way, the ones at home. I think even you and I watched one of them together, but it was two awesome games against Drake. There was the one dunk in the one game.
Yeah.
I think it was Tank, I believe. Am I right? Maybe?
Yep.
Okay. But I just remember those. Missouri State went 0-3 against them, but they were awesome games, all three. So, but story of the season was they could beat everybody. They should have. They couldn't beat the top teams. Ended up 17-7. Wish they could have had a postseason game, but the whole group's coming back.
Yeah, so looking ahead to this 21-22 season, Dana Ford's fourth season at Missouri State, he has a 49-40 record overall at Missouri State. Baker, I'm pretty high on the Bears this year. I would say of that top four, I think they are the they're the fourth of the four, you know, in the preseason rankings. But I think they got a pretty high ceiling. I think that they could be there right in the conversation at the end for first place.
100%. This team can definitely win the league. This is a really good team. It's actually a really deep team when you dive actually into the roster, and Wyatt's going to take us through that as well. For me, and we talked about it with Wyatt, there's going to be plenty of people that can score the basketball. The question for this team is, can they defend? And can they defend at that high level in order to win a Valley regular season and possibly an Arch Madness, get an at-large bid, what have you? Isaiah Mosley is, I think, he's obviously one of the best scorers in the league, but he's a very underappreciated defender in the league. Gage Prim was all defensive team last year. Donovan Clay, the newcomer / oldcomer from Valley perspective, coming over from Valpo, also a great defensive player. So they've got some really good defensive players. It's going to be, I think, the two things majorly for me, and I'll get your take on this in a second, but Dana Ford needs to first figure out how the rotations are going to work and who's going to work, who works well on the floor at the same time with who. And he also needs to figure out, make sure that this team is ready to play defensively.
Couldn't agree more. I think rotations are going to be the biggest X factor for the Missouri State Bears. It was funny, you know, I think the starting five is somewhat of a question mark because there's so many plug and play that, sure. You know, when I was looking at the starting five, I forgot about a starter that started multiple, I mean, was it 20 some odd games last year because I didn't even have him on my radar because I think this team is much deeper this year than where they were last year. Just to preview a little bit of the interview upcoming. But, hey, you know, I know you're a little bit worried about defense, but it's not really something for me. I mean, Missouri State was second in the conference in defensive efficiency last year, right behind Loyola. So I think that they add offense and that their defense is only going to get better, especially with Donovan Clay coming to the Bears team. So I truly think that this – you can't call them a dark horse because they are in that top tier, but I think of that top tier, they're the dark horse of those four.
I think that, and I hear what you're saying about them being second. The difference between them and Loyola defensively last year is my only pushback is Loyola. It was at a completely other level, and there was probably a level between them to get to Missouri State. defensively at least.
Let me spell out the stat real quick because you're exactly right. It is about a 14-point difference between
those two. So I wasn't for it. But that's good. And I didn't know that. So good on you to point that out. For me, though, I think there is another level that they need to get to team defensively wise, but they have a lot of really good individual defenders. We haven't really talked about Donovan Clay until now. I think now's the time to talk about it. Made the transfer from Valparaiso. We've kind of been semi-critical of it just because, I guess I just want to be clear on my stance on it, and I'll let you go as well, Vance. I don't fault Donovan at all, personally. I think he has to do what's right for him. And if the decision for his basketball career and what's right for him personally for his future is to leave Valpo and go to Missouri State, I fully 100% support him. The thing that I don't love about it, and this has nothing to do with Donovan because he's playing by the rules. This is how it was set up. I don't love the idea that a player, especially a good player, but it shouldn't matter how good they are, but it just so happens he's one of the better players in the league, is being able to play the very next year in the same conference. There is no there's no wasted year in between there. There's no sit-out year, which I don't necessarily believe in either. But doing it in conference kind of leaves a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. That's just kind of my thoughts on it. But like I said, I just want to make sure to be clear. I'm not saying anything wrong about Donovan Clay, the person. I just don't love the rule that's being taken advantage of.
I hate it, and I hate it for that reason only. It has nothing to do, like you said, it has nothing to do with Donovan Clay. I hate it for the intra-conference issue alone. I mean, you just think of, what if Jackie Carmichael Baker transferred to Wichita State? You know, like,
he would have never done that.
Exactly. Like, it's just that type of thing. And I know there's, like, the rivalry is not exactly there between Valpo and Missouri State.
No.
And I understand that there is some sort of personal relationship with players on the Missouri State team.
Yeah, and Wyatt talks about that, sure.
And Valpo. But it's just, as a Valley fan, I just don't like the precedent it's starting. Not that we ever think there's going to be a free transfer year upcoming, and boy, do I hope that we're never in this situation again where there is that free transfer year, but I just don't like it for that reason alone.
So here's the positive of the whole thing. The two games between Valparaiso and Missouri State are going to be fun.
Oh, I can't wait. I mean, and Paul said it. He's like, Valpo players are already circling that date.
No question. I cannot wait. Those are must-see games this year for both teams. But overall, just looking at the roster, this is a really darn good roster. They go about 10 deep. Guy that we didn't talk about, Patterson, is one of my favorite players to watch out there. He's kind of one of those tough guys out there. He plays kind of those dirty minutes, and he does the dirty work for this team. I really like him as well. And I don't want to get too deep in the roster because Wyatt breaks down this team way better than I can. So I don't want to sit here and pretend like I can break it down better, but let's get in the non-con real quick.
Yeah, non-con, decent schedule, decent to okay. Two years ago, is that when they were playing just teams I'd never even heard of? But anyway, so they start off with in-state, SEMO. They go to Sam Houston. They are in the Naples Invitational, which is okay. You got Murray State in there. And some other Atlantic 10 teams. And then they have BYU at home, which I think a lot of people will circle. Also at Little Rock. Little Rock's not bad this year. There's a transfer that went to SIU, so I'm a little bit familiar with Little Rock. And then they have South Dakota State at home.
Yeah, one you're missing in there is Oral Roberts, who also had a really nice little tournament run last year. They go to Missouri State. Asmus, one of their guards, they're really good guards from that team who can just absolutely fill it up. He will be back for Oral Roberts, so that will also be, I would imagine they're going to be probably a contender in their league this year. But like you said, South Dakota State, St. Mary's on the road toward the end of the season, a really good matchup for them. BYU, as you said, this is not a bad schedule. As I looked at it, it was better. Like, I think the first glance, I didn't like it. And the second time I really dug into it, who they play, it's better than I gave it credit for originally. That being said, there's not a lot of margin for error. Like, they need to take care of business against BYU. If they want an at-large, They really got to get that St. Mary's game. That St. Mary's game is huge.
I could see a March conversation where you have the blind resumes up against each other, and if they get BYU, Oral Roberts, and South Dakota State, who might be, you know, the automatic qualifier or even a bubble team, and you have them side by side and you have that head to head win, that could reap some dividends come March.
100%. I totally agree with you. I think that there's some going to be some interesting teams. I go back to Oral Roberts with Asemus coming back for them. They're going to be one of the best teams in their league, and they're probably going to be a tournament team. So, I mean, if you can get that win at home, that's going to also be when you see that resume, like you said, it's going to say, hey, they got that. There's probably a tournament team, Oral Roberts. That's a good win. There's not a lot of margin for error. They need to win the Naples Invitational. Like, I don't look at that bracket and think to myself, there's a better team in that tournament than Missouri State. I'm sorry. There's just not.
There, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's almost like you have to win that one to start out the season.
You do.
Yep.
All right. So to me, the big storyline for them, and we touch on with Wyatt, so I don't want to dig too far into it, but I kind of have the question for Missouri State is, can they finally win the big one? And when I say that, it's can they win the close games against good teams, and can they finally close it out and win the league? And that regular season championship, it's kind of been you know, even back to the Paul Lust days, they've had some high expectations over the years. And this year is no different. And if you look at this roster, they should have high expectations. They should be thinking an NCAA tournament bid. Anything less than that is a disappointment. So do you personally think that this is a Missouri State team that can actually win the big one and get themselves to the NCAA tournament?
I do. I truly do think that this Missouri State team feels different this year. There's not a lot of transfers other than Donovan Clay, who already knows how the Valley plays. That they've been transfer heavy in the past, and I kind of throw out last year just because it doesn't count. But I think this team's different. I like their offensive firepower. I like the pieces they have, and it'll just be about the rotations. And I think the non-conference, that's what kind of scares me a little bit from an at-large perspective, is because I think it could take some time to find out what rotations work for the Bears. But yes. I think for Missouri State, we're going to find out pretty early. You know, throwing out the December 1st game, which they go to your Redbirds.
I'll be there.
Yeah.
Redbirds.
I mean, the first three games in January, you've got Drake at home. You go to Bradley. And you have Northern Iowa at home. I mean, you're going to find out pretty quick.
Yeah. No, that's a really challenging start. And so now we get into the over-under, which is the most interesting part. Now we're the last three that we're going to do, these are going to be big numbers. And I have the over-under win total for Missouri State at 12.5 wins this season for their Missouri Valley Conference slate. Over-under, 12.5.
I've said this off the air. I've been trying to talk to you about this team. I love the Missouri State Bears this year. I'm taking the over.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. This is, I don't know where I have them. 12 to 13 feels just right for this team. Especially with who's at the top. It's going to be such a fun team to watch this season. Like you said, they have the disadvantage of making sure they get the rotations right and trying to win some of these must win non-con games. But this team, the ceiling is first place for this team. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
I wouldn't be surprised if on February 26th, they're cutting down the nets at Evansville.
Ooh, is that a hot take? I like it.
That's been the Missouri State Bears. All right, Valley fans, we are excited to talk Missouri State Bears hoops with Wyatt Wheeler of the Springfield News Leader. How we doing tonight, Wyatt?
Oh, I'm good. A little bit hungry. Happy to get away from the baseball game. That thing was the bottom of the second, an hour in, and just kind of what's going on with that.
It's going so long now, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. The last night went 4 hours. Insane. And I mean – and tonight's not going any better, so anything to get away from that. And I'll happily talk some basketball with you guys.
Yeah, I know we're pumped to talk to the Missouri State Bears hoops. They're in that kind of top four tier we want to talk about in the Missouri Valley, kind of preseason, I would say tiers of the Valley. Before we get into this upcoming 2021-2022 season, let's kind of recap a little bit last year. Kind of, I mean, the Bears make the semifinals. It was a weird year. Essentially, everyone's coming back. You know, what's kind of your overall thoughts of last year, and then kind of going into this year, where are you seeing the momentum at?
Yeah, last year, you think back to 2019-20, the year before. They're picked to win the league. They have a lot of transfers come in to where there's a lot of hype around this team, especially when Dana Ford surprised in his first year as head coach. It's like, okay, look at all the transfers he's got in. They're ready to make another jump. And he's really trying to make this work really quickly. And then they never meshed. The chemistry was off, and it was obvious from night one throughout the entire season. They had some good nights. They had some really, really bad nights. They go 16-17. So you go into the next year, Ford really – I mean, they wiped a lot of those guys out, a whole different roster. You see a few more freshmen. You see a lot more JUCO guys than the year before. You get Gage Prim healthy as well, and then Isaiah Mosley and Jamonta Black going into their second years. So you feel like they can grow, and then you have the pandemic, and you don't have a non-conference schedule. Every game but three was wiped out for Missouri State. So they had a COVID outbreak pretty early in that to where it canceled everything through mid-December. End up winning those three. And then they start off with Northern Iowa, who was right there without A.J. Green early on. So you split with them on the road. And then they actually look pretty good. They go on a win streak. They're beating a lot of these teams. But they couldn't beat the top two. That was the one thing. They were really good in Nevada. They were really good against everybody else. But then you go into a four-game stretch where they host Drake twice and they host Loyola Chicago twice, and they lose all four. And they look really bad, especially against Loyola Chicago. Had a chance to beat Drake. They were up really big,
yep.
Especially in that first game, and end up falling apart. To the point where you see some of that lag on, and then you lose 72-46 to Loyola. You lose 70-50 the next night. And then they bounce back. They beat everybody else. I mean, that's just kind of, they beat everybody else until the last day of the season, where they were already locked into the three spot and were going in the Arch Madness. And then you play Drake in the semifinals. You lose on a shot by Joseph Yesufu. With seconds left. So it was a nice bounce back. I think you saw the progress. You were happy to see a sustainable team that actually looked like a team compared to the year before. But now when you take that entire roster and you go into this next year, you get that bonus fifth season of eligibility for Gage Prim. You get Cameron Krutwig finally out of the league. You get Isaiah Mosley going into his third year after a great, great sophomore season that made him the highest scoring player in the league. And you raise those expectations. And third or fourth was right there for Missouri State. They haven't beaten Drake or Loyola, so I'm not going to put them ahead of them. Northern Iowa, getting A.J. Green back, their history, Ben Jacobson. You can't argue with them being ahead of Missouri State as well. So they have a lot to prove this year. Dana has a lot to prove, just kind of going in and saying, hey, this is a program that's really good, and this is one that could win a championship and contend for some of those at-large stuff. So we're seeing this is an important year for him. Even though he got the two-year contract extension over the summer, I think this is one where you just feel like, hey, they need to do something now, because you have Gage Prim, who's one of the most efficient players in the country. He was fourth. He was looking at Sports Reference earlier today. He was the fourth most efficient player in the country last year, behind Luca Garza, and then another guy who graduated. So he's going in the year second to the efficiency, and the two players behind him were Timmy from Gonzaga and Kofi Cockburn from Illinois. So you're talking about he's as efficient as some of the best players in all of college basketball. Those are two All-Americans going into the season. So you got to strike with him. You got to strike while you have Isaiah Mosley, Jamonte Black, and a lot of these other new faces that I've brought in that just kind of give them a little more depth than they had a year ago. So that really just plays into what we're going into this year.
Yeah, it was an interesting team last year with obviously the non-con was a mess just because, and there was nothing he could do about it, only playing the three games, which was really tough. But yeah, it felt like they played some of the best games the year last year. Unfortunately, it didn't ever go their way. I know the one game against Drake was the one where Drake made the huge comeback, was one of the best games in the regular season. And then in the Arch Madness, the game of the tournament was the game against the Missouri State Drake game as well. So it'll be interesting to see with a lot of that Drake group. I know Yesfu's gone, but still a lot of that group coming back. It'll be interesting when those two meet again. I'm curious, and this is just kind of for me, was there any talk? I mean, a 17-7 season, they obviously didn't have a great non-con, but was there any talk of playing any postseason games for them, or was it just that they didn't get invited, or did they try to? Because I know that I had read a few things, and I don't know if it ever really got talked about. There were a few times I read that they were kind of in the mix for a few things.
Yeah.
I don't know if it ever came out.
I know Dana said he wanted to coach that group as much as he could, and he would welcome it. It just never came in. I think some of the COVID stuff that was still hanging over part of that season, of course, you saw what happened with Northern Iowa at the tournament and everything, and just kind of the mess there. I think Missouri State was happy to just kind of save on some expenses there and not take any risks. I don't even know if they were invited to anything. So I think they were happy taking that into the off season and just focusing on the Lady Bears on a Missouri State standpoint.
Yeah. So you mentioned it real quick there, and I'm just curious. So you guys had the final game of the night, the Northern after the Northern Iowa Drake game that was supposed to be. Were you in the building that night?
Yeah. No, I was. Yeah.
We talked a little bit about it with Paul, but just curious your perspective, because I mean that was one of the kind of the big stories of the year.
I might have been sitting next to Paul while that was going on, and we're all just like looking at each other like, what the hell's going on? And I mean, I was actually walking into the arena as things were just starting to come onto Twitter. And I was just like, oh, are they even going to let me inside the building at this point? And I just saw some of the madness there and come up the elevator, because we're not on the side, we're not on court side or anything. So we're in those press box seats way, way high up that the Blues use. And I just walk in, finger gun everybody, and just like, what up, guys? How you doing? And everybody's just running around with their heads cut off. Like, we have no idea what's going on, just waiting for Twitter to say something. So you're looking at the little guy. You're looking at the people running across the floors and kind of the big name. You're looking for Elgin, looking to see who you could spot on the floor, who's running around. And it was crazy. Yeah, it was really weird. that's definitely one that I don't want to redo. That's no fun for anybody. Just the anger and everything, and some of the reports coming out of that and rumors, and didn't even know if I was going to be able to do my game just because it was just that strange. It was maddening.
Yeah. That was one night that is just, I mean, still, it'll go down in Valley Lore, and, you know, hopefully we'll look back and laugh, but it is what it is last year. So looking to 2021-2022 season, Missouri State also has one of the best storylines, I think, of the intra-Missouri Valley Conference storylines. In the last podcast, we talked to Paul Oren, who we've already mentioned here tonight, to get his perspective. So now we're trying to get the Missouri State perspective. Donovan Clay, transfer within the Valley. Just kind of curious your thoughts, curious what you're hearing. And then, you know, for us, we've said from the beginning, it's transfer's fine. Being able to play right away sits a little differently, especially when it's within the Valley. So kind of curious what your thoughts and what you're hearing.
Yeah, no, I understand frustration and getting able to play immediately. I've always been somebody that just sides with the athlete. If they're not happy somewhere and they want to move on and be somewhere else, don't punish them. You see coaches be able to take off all the time whenever they want. You don't see it within conferences too often, maybe the SEC or whatever, the football level. But I'm somebody that just thinks about – I remember when I went to Northern Illinois for 2 years, and I didn't like it. and I transferred to come down here. What if they told me I couldn't go to classes for a year because I transferred? Maybe I would have liked that because I didn't like classes, but it's definitely a topic that's frustrating. And I know there was some frustration between maybe there was some behind the scenes between coaches just kind of seeing that. But Dana Ford's been involved in some of these in the past. You look at, there was a player for when Ford was recruiting at Wichita State when he was an assistant there under Greg Marshall. He goes over to his best friend, Dan Muller at Illinois State, becomes an assistant there and ends up recruiting one of the same players to come play for Illinois State. I forget which name it was. I don't know if it was a Paris Lee or somebody of that type of name, but that caused a lot of frustration, and there's a reason Dana Ford and Greg Marshall haven't talked since. So, Greg Marshall, we all know that. I mean, do you really want to talk to that guy sometimes? It's definitely a frustrating thing, and I'm really excited for when Missouri State and Valparaiso play. Oh, yeah. Donovan, I think I've heard that he's really close to some of the players on this Missouri State team, even before just kind of going into this. I heard Isaiah Mosley played a really big part into his recruitment. Dana's kind of backed that up. I'm excited for media day to talk to Isaiah and just kind of see how that went down. Jamonte's in there as well. Jamonte and Isaiah, of course, played at the same high school, so they're pretty familiar with Donovan. I'm not sure how exactly, but that's for another story. But just kind of some of the frustration from Donovan leaving Valparaiso, whether it was what he wanted to play as a position, so whether it was maybe Valparaiso seeing him as more of a forward, while Donovan wanted to play more of a guard. So that's going to be something to watch on how Missouri State uses them this year. Of course, a lot goes through Gage Prim, just kind of passing the ball around, just everything running through him, to the point where it's a little more positionless on the offensive side, to where Donovan can use some of that 6'8 guard skills to his advantage. You saw him more as a guard a little bit during the exhibition. Not really an exhibition, just a practice that was there for – on homecoming day against some alumni. So that was still kind of joking around, but we've seen what he can do there. I think he's going to be a pretty good defender for this team. I think he's in the starting lineup, but this is watching him, his happiness, and seeing how he's used on this team can play a pretty big role. From everything I've heard is that he's really happy here. And that he's excited and from when I talked to him after he made the commitment, he's excited to play with these guys. And that's another thing about this team. You look at the roster and some of the names that they had on there, we live in the transfer portal era, where you're seeing a guy like Yesufu come on late and transfer to Kansas. Where could Isaiah Mosley have gone? That's one of the top players in the league going into a junior year with three seasons of eligibility left. And I've heard that he was contacted by some major schools. He's still here. Gage Prim, I touched on it just a bit ago, one of the more efficient players in the country. One more year, could he have gone somewhere else? But they chose to stay at Missouri State, and I think that's a special thing you have. A lot of other schools can speak to that in the Valley too right now. But for Donovan Clay to want to go from Valparaiso to Missouri State speaks to it. And we've seen Valparaiso just switch over year after year with its roster. And that's kind of a strange thing as well. So it's different kind of roster building in college basketball that we're just getting used to. But Clay should be a big contributor to this team.
And I think that leads into kind of my next question. Where I'm struggling, at least with this roster, is the starting five. So I think, you know, we know Prim, Mosley, Sharp, are for sure there. You know, you got Minute coming. Is it Minute? I believe is how you pronounce that one. And then you have Clay and then Jamonte Black. You know, so there's three guys for two spots. I think it's a little bit interchangeable. I know Black had some – or Jamonte had some good success off the bench for a couple-game stretch there last season. So it'll be interesting for me just to see who that starting core five will end up being.
Yeah, and I'm there with you. I think that's a big storyline for this team, just kind of one of those minor ones. I think Donovan gets in there, and then you're looking at a Keaton Hervey who gets overlooked sometimes. I think he's a really good defender at 6'7".
Started all 24 games last year.
Started every game last year. So I think he really gets overlooked there. But I think Dana's just really excited about this versatility that Donovan brings a little more. So that, and I think that Donovan's another guy you want to try to keep happy as well. I think Keaton's really grabbed on to being a good team player and everything, to where he's going to be happy with whatever role he's going to be in the lineup. And I think the same can be said about Jalen Minette and Jamonte Black. Jamonte, if you look at his splits from his first two seasons, he is a very good coming off the bench. You look at the three-point shooting, the percentages are all up there pretty well. The shooting percentage is up there. And I think that's a good spot for him. And he's a leader on the team, a team guy, to where he can really if he really embraces that role, if that's what they choose to do, that could be a good spot for him. And Jalen's, just from what I've heard in the offseason, you can sit down and watch him at practices for minutes and just see him not miss from deep. And they've been really, really impressed with his ability there. I think he's still learning a little bit from what I've heard, just kind of trying to get into fitting in with the team and knowing how they play, to maybe where he's coming off the bench for the early part, maybe can crack the lineup later on. But yeah, those two are interchangeable guys, to where you like Jamonte Black's energy and who he is as a team player, but you also like the weapon that Jalen is. Just being one of the better three-point shooters in IUPUI's history. But he's also a high-volume shooter who's never seen a shot he didn't like. So he's going to take a lot of them that might be dumb, but he's going to make some spectacular threes. So just another weapon that's really nice, especially with the departure of Jared Ritter. When he kind of didn't really turn out to be what Missouri State hoped he would be, not playing basketball anymore, from what I understand, and just a hometown kid that had a lot of pressure on him going in, to where Missouri State had to kind of reload at that position.
Yeah, just looking at this roster, I mean, you mentioned with Jalen, he's going to shoot a lot of threes, but it feels like they go about 10 or so deep. It's just going to be kind of – offensively, they've got a ton of weapons, and it's just going to be kind of on Dana to be able to kind of interchange them, what rotations, what teams on the floor kind of work together right. But I think for me, the biggest – I don't know if it's an issue or I think the biggest hurdle for this team is – which is Dana Ford's calling card is defense. And I think that, you know, you've got a guy like Donovan Clay you're bringing in, who's one of the premier defenders in the league, block shots, he can defend really well. I think Isaiah Mosley is one of the most underappreciated defenders on the ball in the league. I don't think he gets enough love, but I was wondering, just curious, is that kind of where you see it for them? I think that offensively, they're going to have plenty of weapons. They're going to be able to score the basketball, but it's going to come down to getting those stops. And I think that being a good defensive team consistently is going to be their big hurdle to get over.
Yeah. Defensively is what Dana was supposed to be when he came in. That was supposed to be his calling card. He just wanted to be he wants to be a defensive coach, but we haven't seen that too much. We saw in his first year, he tried limiting possessions when it went to that three-man weave. The second year was just a mess, and last year they just tried hard at points. So figuring that out is going to be crucial. I think you're going to see some steps forward for a few of these guys. I mean, DeMarcus Sharp started out last year injured. Kind of really, it took him a little bit to ease back in there. But when he really got healthy, he turned into a second half of the season. He really started to come on strong to where I'm curious to see how well he does with a healthy offseason going into this, taking a step as a defender. Keaton Hervey, who we touched on, I think he's a good defender. Not somebody that's going to score a lot, but somebody who can come in and guard a pretty good guy. Gage can get his block shots and rebound. So, and Donovan just adds a whole different kind of versatility to that team, to where you could see he's a known defender in the league already, which is weird to say, but he's somebody that could play, he could guard different positions. So there's definitely it's a question because they haven't figured it out yet here in the first few years. This seems to be the roster where if they're going to do it, they need to do it with this one.
Yep. And it's a very versatile roster. And you even mentioned Gage Prim, who's all defensive team last year, which I didn't even mention. So who's also a solid defender in his own right. So I guess that brings me to the final part about Missouri State is it feels like when there's high expectations, which there are this year, it's been the Missouri State of the last, decade. It's when they have the high expectations, it doesn't work out. I know part of that's Paul Lost's era of teams, but is there something that we can pinpoint of, it's been weird luck, things happening, just what's different about this Missouri State team, I guess, to stop people from assuming that this is going to be just another one with high expectations that falls short?
Yeah, you're talking about a few of the last, two of the last four seasons now?
I mean, you talked about the 2 years ago when they had the team that started against Little Rock and Xavier.
Yeah.
They had those losses, and it was like, okay, from there it was just downhill.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's two of the last four seasons they've been picked to win the league.
Yep.
And they were fighting on those final days to avoid a play-in. And one of the times they did get in the play-in, they were the first Valley team ever. That was the year Lusk got fired. So I think, especially in that season, you have an NBA player on your roster who is a little banged up throughout the year. Alizé, just having him on the roster kind of elevated their expectations and everything. And you felt good about some of the guys coming back. They looked really good the year before, but Ronnie Russo went out midseason to where it kind of turned around the season. You look at how they struggled early on in that final Lusk year, and then the cryotherapy thing happens. And ends up shaking up their entire season and just went downhill and ended up being bad after that. You have the really good first season under Dana. You're picked to be bottom half of the league. You end up finishing third, had a chance to win the league until the final day of the year. And then you bring in guys where you see Jeff Goodman ranking them as top 100 type transfers. Lamont West was like the number 7 transfer in the country, just kind of ranked by a lot of those guys. Tyreek Dixon was eligible after sitting on the bench. Josh Hall was eligible after sitting on the bench. And there were just a lot of these names. They had NCAA experience as well. So Ford Cooper Jr., 4-star freshman, decides to skip a year. You saw how good Tulio Da Silva was that first year, to where they had these high expectations and they kind of brought it upon themselves, to where the guys never clicked. I think that was just a part of bad roster building. You just tried to make it happen way too quickly, because you know how good of a recruiter you are, and these guys are out there, that you just saw the success and thought you can maybe have the success immediately in year two. To where you're skipping a lot of the chemistry stuff. So you overhaul it last year. You feel good about this core group you have, and then you bring it back for another year. So this time you're really hoping that you can just improve upon a group that you've already had and has shown something. But you're looking at 1-2 Loyola and Drake. And then you're looking at Northern Iowa, something that's proven itself before, Missouri State hasn't proved anything. Dana Ford hasn't proved anything as to be a championship coach. And that's where you have this season different, to where they don't have those expectations. It's more of a prove it. There's going to be expectations from the fan base. There'll be expectations written by me, just kind of going into the year. To say it should be high, I mean, you got to be better than the four seed. You got to be better than fourth in this league. You got to be playing on a Sunday at this point. You get the contract extension. You have all these names back. You have two All-Valley players going, all first-team Valley players going into the year. You got to be playing on Sunday. I think this is a different type of group just because of how it's been recruited, and it's not Paul Lusk. To where I think it's fair to say this one's a little bit different to what we have than what we've seen down here in years past.
No, I think it's a good squad. I think that, to me, the expectation for this team is to be competing for at minimum an at-large spot for the NCAA tournament. Yeah. I mean, I think they really need to take care of business when they play the decent teams they do in the non-conference, and they can't afford slip-ups, and they are going to have to win some of those games that they didn't last year against the top teams. But no, I think the expectations have to be to make the tournament. Kind of, you're curious your overall thoughts. This is last one for me, at least. I'd love to know where you think of the Valley as a whole, because to us, it feels like this is like kind of – it's been a 3 years coming now where the Valley has been taking these next steps. And I'd love to get your thoughts on this. To me, the expectation is if they're not getting two bids this year based on who the top four is, it's a disappointment.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I think especially after last year, you have to take a little bit of a step back with – a little step back with Loyola. I think when you look at that, you just feel like, oh, they have everything there. They have so many back. But Cameron Crutwig is one of the best players to ever come through the league. I mean, just statistically, what he was able to do leading that team, a Final Four appearance, a win over Illinois to get in the Sweet 16. I mean, that's incredible. So you're losing one of the better players in the history of the league, maybe the best player in the history of that program. And you have a new head coach with Porter Mosher gone. I really love Lucas Williamson. He should be getting all these defensive recognition nationally as he's getting. So I still am really high on that team and think they should be challenging for an at-large bid Valley championship. AJ Green is a possible NBA guy that can elevate Loyola to elevate Northern Iowa to be an NCAA team, fight for a chance to win the Valley. And I love what Drake has coming back with his core, and I think Darren DeVries might be the best head coach in this league. So those three should be fighting for it, and they should be putting themselves in a position. And Missouri State should be right there with them, what they have on this non-conference schedule, what they have back, and where they should be in the Valley. So I think the top four are incredibly strong. And then just kind of looking at the rest of it, I really like what Southern Illinois has with Coach Mullins, and I think they're due for a bounce back, getting the mask back, fitting him in there with some others. I think Southern Illinois can really sneak up on some teams when they're kind of being overlooked a bit going into the year. Bradley is taking a step back. Illinois State's probably at the bottom. Evansville's right there at the bottom. Valparaiso, we have no idea because they have so much new. So, I mean, it's just another year in Valpo, but it's a strong league, and then you get better next year. You add Belmont. You're really excited about the Missouri Valley Conference right now, and everybody should be having these kind of expectations.
So as we look to close out here, I know we are pumped for the Missouri State Bears season to get going on November 9th. They are hosting the Southeast Missouri State in in-state rival. So kind of last question as we head out. I know you're getting a taste of it with football, but, you know, just from a basketball beat writer perspective, what are you most excited about this upcoming season after a COVID season where I'm sure you didn't travel as much as you did anywhere?
Oh, I miss Chicago, man. I want to get up to Chicago. That's I haven't been there in so long. So I just want to do a Loyola trip. That's what I'm thinking about right now. I think actually the night before the Bears play at Loyola, the Bulls are at the Bucks. So I really want to go see Alize Johnson. See him and talk to him. That's one of my favorite players I've ever covered, just from a human being standpoint as well. And I'm a Bulls fan, so that's really cool that I've been able to see that happen. So I'm looking for. I really want to get up to Chicago for a day or two, and then I'm just excited to see people again. It's been locked up, and I love the Valley. Of course, I grew up in Normal and been going to Valley games my entire life, and have loved the league and love the beat writers in this league. And there's some special people there. And I think it's going to be a special season for men's basketball. And I know for sure it's going to be a special season for women's basketball, just because the Lady Bears are so incredible here and they have everybody back. So it's a basketball city down here. Great high school basketball as well. So I'm excited for everything, man. It's a really fun time of year.
And once again, thank you again, Wyatt Wheeler from the Springfield News Leader. Where can people find you online, Wyatt?
Oh, if people really want to do that to themselves, I think the last tweet I said was about something about Buzz Lightyear. Have you guys seen that trailer?
I have not, but I mean, no.
I'm telling you, that might be the best movie trailer I've ever seen in my life. Buzz Lightyear, man, bringing it in. So, I mean, I'm at Wyatt Wheeler _NL. We joke around a lot. And always fun interacting with people. It's a very good, very strong Twitter community we have there. So,
yeah. Wyatt is a must-follow, Valley.
He is. He's one
if
of the
not following him. You need to be.
He's the, I don't like to throw a lot of, you know, shade out there, but I think he is the best Valley beat writer follow out there. No offense to Paul Oren.
I love Paul Oren. I think it's fun. It's important to have fun with everybody, and it's interacting with readers. Why wouldn't I want to do that? So it's awesome, man. It's a lot of fun.
Hey, thanks again for joining us, and we're ready for a Valley season, Wyatt.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait.
This has been another preview episode of the March the Arch podcast, where Baker and myself broke down the Missouri State Bears and the Indiana State Sycamores. We were joined by Wyatt Wheeler from the Springfield News Leader to talk a little Bears and Valley hoops. Baker, where can people find us along the way?
Yeah, you guys can find us marchthearchpodcast.com, where Vance is going to be starting to put up some blogs on there. So everybody be looking for those. You guys can also find us on Twitter at marcharchpod, at marcharchbaker. marcharchmailbag@gmail.com is also a place where you can send in your feedback for the show, different takes, some of your takes. Could have a good take like the Indiana State take that I had, as they have the highest ceiling of the bottom five. Maybe you agree, maybe you disagree. So definitely reach out and send us your feedback. And next week, we will be going with our two NCAA tournament teams in our final 2 days preview. It will be the Drake Bulldogs and the Loyola Ramblers, which that'll be a lot of fun.
And with that, I'll say, go Valley.
Start talking about the Valley. Why not?